go. I'd like to recognize my co-authors, Lisa Pompei, who's presenting next and is leading this study, as well as Hester Lipscomb and John Dement. We're funded by NIOSH, have no financial relationships to disclose. I'm going to move us back to type 2 violence. Again, in the hospital setting, this is where a patient or visitor is the perpetrator of these events. We know from the literature the prevalence is high. It's been associated with job dissatisfaction and turnover. Lisa's going to talk next about underreporting and that being a problem. But I want to focus today on this notion that it's perceived as part of the job among these workers, and what effects does that have on the workers and on us as researchers as we seek to conduct studies among that population. So the study that we'll be describing is focused on hospital surveillance, taking place in two large healthcare systems, one in Texas, one in North Carolina. We've got two large medical centers, four community hospitals, about 11,000 participants. These include our traditional groups, nurses, nurses' aides, physicians, but also some groups that aren't traditionally captured in this type of research, our security and police officers, food services workers, housekeeping, et cetera. We did start by analyzing existing data at these hospitals, workers' compensation claims, events that are reported through the hospital's own safety reporting systems, but these are fairly limited in the amount of circumstantial detail we could gather. So we conducted a blitz survey. This was a 5-minute voluntary anonymous survey to get more information about events. We interviewed a subset of those participants over the telephone. We also conducted focus groups and key informant interviews to gather workers' perceptions, the magnitude and frequency of type 2 violence, talk about how they manage and report events, and also related policies and procedures. Our study definition did include physical assault, regardless of whether an injury occurred, physical threat, and verbal abuse. So in the survey, we had about 5,400 responses. Half of participants reported at least one event in their career. In the past 12 months, 12% experienced physical assault, 18% physical threat, and over a third verbal abuse. In our qualitative methods, we heard violence comes with the territory. You can't take it personal. It's something we're used to. It's drilled into you. Your patient's under stress. It's behavior that's not unexpected. Blow it off. One worker told us, I go to work every shift and think, who is going to beat on me tonight? They talked about experiencing violence in an environment where there was a strong emphasis on patient satisfaction. I think what's expected of nurses is for us to tolerate violence. We're supposed to be representative of the hospital. We're supposed to just make things nice and this and that. We heard, I feel like customer service comes first above all else. Administration cares more about the patient's perception of our hospital than they do about the staff. And this emphasis was something described as being known by patients as well. Our threats from patients now are, what's your name? Wait until I get my survey. And this is their patient satisfaction survey. After they yell at you and they curse you out because they know you're going to get in trouble. Okay, so workers were telling us what we already knew from the literature, that it was perceived as part of the job, but what does this mean for them? Certainly they can be physically injured from these events, but there were a lot of non-physical consequences as well that were very concerning. In the Blitz survey, 40% of those who experienced violence in the past year reported being frightened or worried about their safety at work. When we looked only at the subset who described experiencing verbal abuse, this was still 30%. We heard it's incredibly frustrating to not feel safe in a workplace. It makes you question your job. It makes you question what you're doing with your life. In our North Carolina study hospitals, we had access to data from a large surveillance system that compiled data at the individual level in a de-identified way from ongoing administrative data sources, including workers' compensation claims and pharmacy claims. and we saw significant associations between experiencing type 2 violence and employee prescription claims for antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications. Participants talked about working in this environment where violence is part of the job and social support they received on the unit. And there were many great examples where their coworkers stepped in, their managers stepped in to support them in these events. But it was very clear they don't always get the support that they need. Part of this was related to patient satisfaction. If the patient is upset or acting in an aggressive manner and they say, "I want the supervisor," the supervisor comes down and all of a sudden it's like the workers don't matter. Now we have an angry customer and we have to make them happy so they'll give us good marks on our surveys. This quote is from a worker from the float pool who was sent to provide a constant observation of a patient known to already be aggressive. There's a particular floor. Anytime you go there, the nurses will tell you, "The reason why you are here is to take care of the patient. Even if you call 10 times, they will never come into the room." In addition to the need for social support at the unit level, participants talked about a need for institutional level support. They asked for clear and enforced policies. We heard a lot of, "I'm assuming there's a written policy. I'd have to Google it. I don't really have it here in my hands." They wanted something more like a real policy saying, "This is where the line is. This is what you're allowed to do." They talked about a need for training, not only in training to recognize events, training to de-escalate situations, but training in what other workers' roles are in a situation. If I call security personnel, what are they allowed to do? If I call police, what are they allowed to do? And training in how to communicate events to each other and to the institution. But there were challenges. We heard hospital administration does not want to support the time financially that it would take to train staff properly. One of the managers for nursing care assistant said, "Of course, there is no continuing education budgeted for the nursing care assistants." And they talked about a need for consistent follow-up to event reporting. Reporting through official channels, such as workers' compensation, was described as a black hole. They didn't always get a closed loop there. Sometimes events weren't relayed to the managers of that worker, yet they made it out to other groups. A few workers who had sought legal action for events perceived a lack of support there as well. So what does this mean for our research approach and how we interpret our findings? I want to give two examples. One is based on our survey. These were participants' more serious events in the past 12 months. 25% of those were not reported anywhere, not through the official channels, kind of these electronic systems, not to a coworker or a manager, not in the patient's chart. And we asked these workers why, and these are their reasons for not reporting. Some events simply were not perceived as being serious or they weren't physically harmed, but 20% of those indicated this is part of their job and that's why they're not reporting. And for us, as we use workers' compensation claims data and data from these hospital systems, because they're easy to get, they're efficient, it's great to go through and be able to calculate rates, but one of the reasons cases aren't showing up there is because they believe this is part of their job. Another example comes from a group of workers that we had not heard of in the occupational safety and health literature, and if you haven't either, it's because there's nothing there. Hospital sitters. Most of ours come from the float pool. They're sent out to different units to provide that one-on-one continuous observation of patients, many of whom have already been aggressive or have the high likelihood of becoming aggressive. Their behavior might be unpredictable or difficult to manage. So in terms of our research approach with this is really written into their job title and their job description, and so we thought it was very important to do some analyses that stratified by job title and included sitters as their own category. And from our Blitz survey, the 12-month prevalence here of physical assaults, physical threats, and verbal abuse, and I think I don't need to say much about this slide. The picture's kind of right there. Comparing sitters to aides, nurses, and physicians and physician assistants. This is the building where I work. It's less than a mile from one of our large medical centers that's in the study, but in many regards, we are a world away from the units on which they work. I spend most of my time at a computer. When we started the study, we were contacted by a few workers who got in the survey saying, thank you for looking at this issue. This is really important to me. Well, good, we hit on the right target here. That's great. I'm reading descriptions and the surveys we get in and the workers' compensation claims. And certainly there are events that I think, wow, that's really serious. But it's not until we get into these telephone interviews and the focus groups and the key informant interviews where participants are describing to me with such composure events that are traumatic. Other participants in focus group sessions can recognize these are traumatic situations that these workers are facing very regularly on their job. And so, I mean, the question of what does it mean for me as a researcher, I'm a fairly new researcher, this is not something I've had a whole lot of experience with, but it's something that I want to think more about, and I think at this point, for me, it's important to tell their story in a way that I can show you the prevalence ratios, I can show you the confidence intervals, but a lot of what has spoken to me, and I think speaks to audiences and also stakeholders in the hospital setting, is the workers' words themselves, and so that's what I've taken from this, and it's these experiences that certainly support their recommendations, the need for policies and training, as well as reporting system enhancements. Unfortunately, we're not seeing that tangibly accessible to workers or practiced or enforced, and as long as there's still that intense focus on customer service and patient satisfaction, we tend to be perpetuating this perception of violence as part of the job. So, thank you. Specifics on that. I mean, they were having to take their own time, not work time, to deal with this. And they were told that, you know, they were told the magistrate's not going to do anything about it. I wouldn't waste your time.
My name's Dorothy Wigmore. I'm from the Canadian side of the border and got involved in this issue through my unit, you know, one that Vanessa works for these days. And in 1986, the Canadian Union of Public Employees at a health and safety conference, where one of the big issues was violence at work. And
what year is it now? I know. And where are we now?
And so that reflects sort of the membership saying something's going on here. Mm-hmm. And it was important enough to make it to a national agenda, to guidelines, to a whole lot of things. And then when I got involved, I ended up writing my first peer-reviewed article, ended up in a book that was, and where what I discovered there was that a lot of the literature about this actually came from the work that unions have done.
Okay.
And the reports of memberships, and then the pressure that they put on in the UK and some work that had been done there. And this whole thing about violence being part of the job was a huge issue then. Mm-hmm. So what I'm curious about is, why the hell is it, you know, is it still this way after we've known so much about this? The folks from below have spoken, the researchers have spoken, mm-hmm. There's some qualitative stuff, there's some quantitative stuff, and we're struggling to try and get a regulation just to cover healthcare workers and everybody else in California right now. does that affect the research approach that you do?
Yeah, thank you for your comment. It brings to mind to me the sitters, this group called to give that constant observation. And just an example there, I mean, they're contracted out often. So the hospitals aren't, I mean, we don't always have access to them. And so it's still part of the job. And it's like, well, when the job, these high-risk jobs are given to groups that are brought in to provide services for the hospital, that means something in terms of our research approach. But it's like, well, if you're going to have an effort to really make it better for the workers, how do you feel about that at an institutional level, you know? We've got some stuff we can give to you. Lisa presented something at a conference on that, specifically focused on nurse manager involvement, that talks about some mitigation. So we can. I don't know who's next. Do you want to go ahead? I don't know if you speak on some of that in your presentation, but. Something that comes up in our meeting with hospital stakeholders as well. It's a complex. Right. Yep.
We should just take one more.
Okay. One more. You've had your hand up.
We've got lots of tools that you can use, but we've got
Thank you.